say it, Jay. Say the hello.
I was holding my breath.
This is about the eighth time we've tried hello because things went wrong and then I went picky.
And it's all, be really picky on his hellos.
Picky.
It's all going very
picky.
Well.
Welcome to Movie Banter.
We've got a circus here.
Everyone joined in.
We've got elephants, jugglers, fire breathers.
We have.
It's incredible.
Episode 67, baby.
Oh,
yay,
yes.
Yeah, better believe it.
Shame it's an audio podcast.
Really. Two more before the big sexual innuendo.
Which is in itself a sexual
innuendo. Which is what, Paul?
The big throbbing sexual innuendo.
Exactly, yeah, indeed, yes. 69, obviously, just for those who still
I was going to say 70, and Paul can't do maths.
Exactly. 470.
Sorry, that's even... Granny chaser, are you, Paul?
Even worse. I'm John Sands.
I'm Jennifer Masters.
And I'm Paul Young.
And Carenza. Who's Paul Young? There's no Paul Young here.
Oh, Jen's pulled back the curtain.
Yeah, exactly. To explain, Paul Young is my real name, you see. It's all a tax dodge. Paul Carenza is... Well, Carenza is my mum's dog's name, originally, so I've named myself after the dog.
Indiana Jones. Yeah. It's not a direct correlation, is it? You haven't got the hat for a start.
No, exactly.
Not on. It's a lovely name.
Thank you very much.
And it literally means love.
It does mean love. It's a Cornish name. If you're not from the UK and don't know where Cornwall is, it's a bit like Hobbiton, but it's sort of... bit more hobbity.
What if they're not from Middle Earth? It gets viewed kind of like I think the deep south does in America.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
it's the leg of the
UK. Southwest. It's fine in the southwest. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's it's a Cornish name, Corinne. But I couldn't be Paul Young on stage because there's an 80s pop singer called Paul Young, and
who?
So. Exactly, yes. And so they wouldn't let me be a stand-up as Paul Young. So I'm Paul Carenza.
People might get confused.
Exactly. So thanks, Jen, for having to make me explain that.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to tell them your real name in a minute as well.
Barry.
Hubert von Winkelstein. Or Barry, for sure.
Hubert Masters.
Exactly.
No.
That would explain a lot.
It would. So this week we've got lots to fit in. Well, we haven't actually got a lot to fit in.
We've got enough, it probably won't be a two-parter.
Quality,
like
not quantity, I think, this week. We haven't got sort of eight films to fit in, but we have got three. I think there's going to be quite interesting discussions going on here.
Some
proper good old-fashioned banter here. We've got Robin Hood, the new Russell Crowe Ridley Scott film, Four Lions, which you may not have heard of if you're not in the UK. I don't know how wide an audience it's got so far.
It's a suicide bomber comedy.
Yeah,
but don't make assumptions about what we mean by that.
It's a bomb-com. Really. That's what it is.
Yes.
Don't get that wrong.
But we'll discuss it in depth a bit later on. We've also got a hot tub time machine, indeed, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
The Ron Silwood stain of again, if you're not in the UK, that doesn't matter. It's a cultural reference.
Yes.
So all that to look forward to.
And emails and other talking about stuff and bits of news and stuff.
Desert Island Flicks will do best time travel film, I believe, this week. We were going to do best car chase film as set up last week, but we wanted to give you a bit long because we've only had about one or two emails from you. So you, the listening public, best car chase film, tell us now, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, tell us.
You best sort of teach your way. We're not going to do it until we've got enough people.
Exactly, it's your time you're wasting.
Yes. So we've got a couple, but we just want a couple more.
We're not quorate, so come on, first thing I want to do, can I do a quick plug first of all?
Oh,
absolutely.
Good.
Thank you. And what it is because my Edinburgh show this year is I'm writing it now. It's an Edinburgh Festival thing in August, mm-hmm. and you do it with a themed show. So I'm doing a show about what every country thinks of their neighbours, because the whole point is that, you know, as an Englishman, I know what we think of the French, and it's not nice. I know what the French think of the English, and it's not nice as well. But the English stereotype of the French is, they're arrogant and they eat garlic and chomp on onions and
cycle
with berets,
striped jumpers,
and go ee-haw, ee-haw, ee-haw. And we know it's not necessarily true, but that's the stereotype.
Yeah, it's the mental shortcut we take when we think
exactly.
of
the and Americans think of the Brits as, I suppose, tea drinking, which we are drinking tea, aren't we?
And bad teeth, which I don't think is true. Actually, that's a weird one. Actually,
the bad teeth.
Whenever British people get challenged with that, they always go, "What? Why?"
It's because of the Americans, because they've always had this Hollywood kind of.
Well, they all do their teeth.
Yes, Americans all get equal, precisely done teeth.
Yeah,
not all get, but that's the stereotype.
Whereas
Brits don't, but you get fixed if you've got bad teeth, but you just have normal teeth.
So that's our stereotype. But my point is that what the show wants to do is find out, like, what do Ukrainians think of Albanians, or what do Afghanistan think of Kazakhstan? Yeah, I don't know, these things. The things that we wouldn't know necessarily because we're not from there. So given, I thought what I could use is a bit of a platform, given that I know for a fact we have listeners all over the world.
Yeah.
Mostly in about three different countries. But, you know, so if you're listening and you're not from the UK, whatever country you're from, can you please email in and tell us, or tell me, either podcast@movieband.co.uk or paul@paulcorenza.com, feel free to use either. Just tell us what you think of your neighbours. Yeah. And we're not going to broadcast it on the podcast. It's not going to be a readout thing.
So you can be as offensive as
it's
you
It's not that sort of show. But if any research you can do for me, then feel free to just let me know, if you happen to know any single country in the world, what the stereotype is of their neighbours. And like I said, we'll go no further, apart from converted into jokes
yes.
for August. So thank you for that. Thank you.
Fair enough. Can we all plug things now?
You can. Go for it.
Go on.
Get plugging.
I don't think I've got anything to plug, really.
Your website? You can do your website.
Well, I could do that. Okay, it's enough of a...
It's busy enough. You don't need them, to be honest. Most
people randomly listening to this have probably come here from that site. So,
fair point.
Anything plug, Jen?
Yeah. Me. I can plug me.
Might see you try.
No.
Barry.
Any hair implants?
No, the film that I was in, The Egad Zombies, is actually at Cannes at the moment, and I'm on the poster.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Are you really on the poster, really?
No, I'm on the poster.
Jen's at the Cannes Film Festival. Which is on at the minute, isn't it? Cannes is on.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, this is, we're reporting live from there, because you wouldn't know if we were.
Exactly. Yeah, it's always famous people walking past.
For celebs.
Exactly. Yes. Three in this room.
Can anyone go? Can you just turn up?
Yeah,
you can, but you just can't get into parties and things like that.
Oh, I can't do that anyway. I can't do that here.
No. Come on, bless you. I think you can go and see film. You just need to get in early and buy tickets for the films. Because there's like London Film Festival, Edinburgh Film Festival.
No, I suppose so. Yeah,
you know, if you get in early, you buy the tickets, you're fine. But I'm going to Cannes next month, actually.
Oh, really?
For the first time.
I think you might have missed the festival.
But I'm going for some gigs, so that'll be nice.
That'll be nice.
But I'll go to a cinema while I'm there and then say that, you know...
You saw films at Cannes. You saw films at Cannes.
Exactly, yeah. There you are, you think.
Sneaky.
I'll look out for your poster.
Yeah.
Cool. Would have been torn down and graffitied. Exactly. Draw a little moustache on it.
Shall I? Barry. Yeah.
To cover up Jen's actual big moustache.
Of course, yeah. A bigger moustache.
Exactly.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, sorry.
Anyway, we've got slightly off topic.
We have got slightly off topic. This is more banter than movie banter. So should we get on the movies?
Yes,
get on the movies. Should we do a bit of news desk first of all?
I think we can do. There's a couple of bits going on.
Yeah, wait. Thank you, Jen. Well done. Wouldn't be the same without Jen randomly doing Morse code in the corner.
Oh, yes. Actually, we had no feedback on the jingle from last week or 2 weeks ago.
Oh, we didn't, did we?
No, none whatsoever.
Tell us your feedback. Tell us.
Anyway, but yes, news desk. See, there's one story I feel, because we started disagreement off air, and then we thought, no, we'll save it, we'll pin it up until we actually start recording. Because Shia LaBeouf has come out saying that. He's come out. No, that's not the news, sorry. Shia LaBeouf has said in public, he's come out speaking against the Indiana Jones latest basically saying it wasn't very good.
Well, we all knew that. What's taking him so long to realise it?
This is where the argument is going to come in, because I could, even as the story got mentioned by Paul, Jen started going.
Why would you say anything? Why is he being a bit of an idiot and slating off his bosses? That film I did. Yeah, don't fancy doing it anymore, so I'm going to slate it. It's just an idiot.
Maybe that's why. I don't think it's not that he doesn't fancy it anymore. I think that I think he's killed the franchise, to be honest.
Yeah, but the thing is,
no, there are plans afoot for a fifth one. It still made money.
He does say, "I feel like I dropped the ball on the legacy that people loved." That was his exact quote.
Yes, your fault.
No, because he did take a degree. He said that as an actor, it's your responsibility to make it work, and I didn't make it work. But
I think he's covering his ass for basically saying, saying what everyone else is thinking, but you don't say it when you're in the film.
But this is where the disagreement comes in, because I quite like the fact that for once an actor's going out and saying, I did this, it wasn't very good. Because so every actor says, oh, it's the best film I've ever made, everyone's brilliant, I love working with these people. It just gets boring. I want to hear an actor not just ripping into it for no good reason, but just saying, if it's true, just saying, yeah, it wasn't particularly good.
Yeah. What I quite like is the fact that he's done that, and then just a few days after he said that he wasn't impressed with Transformers 2.
Well, he was.
Saying the heart was gone. But the nice thing is, you know, I take your point that once a bit of time, you know, obviously you don't do it on the original press.
No, if you're meant to be plugging the film, you don't say it's rubbish, don't go
A year or so later you might do it. But then the next line of the article says the actor is in Cannes to promote the sequel to Wall Street. So the thing is, you know, he's doing interviews about Wall Street and they're saying, so tell us, you know, Indiana Jones, did you like the film you did? And you go, well, no, now a bit of time's passed, I can tell you it's rubbish. What about Transformers 2? Now's a bit of time's passed, I can tell you it's rubbish. What about Wall Street 2? Oh, it's brilliant, you must go and see Wall Street 2. But I'll tell you in a year what I really thought of it.
Well, yeah. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. But at the same, although Wall Street 2 is getting better reviews, I think, than either Transformers 2 or Indiana Jones 2.
He's franchise boy, isn't he, really?
You're trying to distance yourself from previous work. I mean, I think just having a little bit of subtlety in your humility and just staying quiet is probably the best thing to do.
Jen, we'll have to agree to disagree. It is not an absolute point.
Well,
you think that? I think something different. I quite like the fact, because if you know an actor is always just going to say, oh, it's brilliant, then why would you ever listen to anything they say?
But
if
they
you don't
say it's brilliant, they just shut up about it.
No, I don't know. I quite like the fact that someone's willing to just give an opinion, give a genuine opinion about something.
See, equally, Megan Fox said about the Transformers film, people are well aware this is not a movie about acting, and she generally was sort of not being too fond of it.
She's now been dropped from Transformers.
That's the thing, you've got to be careful what you say.
But it's not just the franchise of film, it's the director and working with them in the future, or that kind of production company. I just don't pee people off.
Sheila, but he's now got millions of it. He probably thinks, I could never work again. I don't mind it at all. I respect him slightly more for saying it.
I just love the fact that the article on the BBC News website has got a picture of Sheila Booth looking very smug to camera going, this idea that that's the exact photo or the exact moment he was saying these things. Like, yes, I do not like any of them. Want to do something about it? But bless him.
Yes. So he became British.
Exactly. Megan Fox being dropped from Transformers 3.
Sheila Roast Booth. British.
Yes, well done. Because I think Michael Bay, or reports coming out saying Michael Bay is ultimately his decision. He went, no, going to drop her. Now her representatives come out saying, no, it's her decision. She has chosen to go. And my instinct is that ultimately Michael Bay ditched her. But we can't be sure. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to lose her from Transformers 3.
No.
Because...
Well, the thing is, a lot of people say, oh, you know, after these franchise things, say, well, that character's run its course. Was there ever enough of a character to have a course to run?
No. At least Sheila Booth, I want to like him more than I do. I've yet to see him... It's kind of like Sam Worthington. I've yet to really see him do anything as him.
Mm.
He just gets dropped into things and then says his lines and goes home. But not in an offensive way. He's just a bit bland.
Mm. Yes, bland.
So, but at least the character in the Transformers film... He at least has stuff to do, and he seems quite important, and his character is involved in things. Whereas Megan Fox just turns up, hello, I'm the eye candy, brilliant, I'm going to run around a bit, and then wear skimpy clothes, and then credits roll.
Yeah.
So you could replace her with anyone, really.
Well, exactly.
I don't think Megan Fox does not sell the film.
No.
I can't think anyone's going, no, Megan Fox isn't in the third one, I'm not going to go and see this.
Yes.
But yeah, I just want giant robots and explosions.
That's generally what the film is, really.
Well, yes, although hopefully in a better way than Transformers 2 did.
Yes.
But anyway,
we shall see. We shall see how that transpires.
Moving on to
blockbusters.
Speaking of slightly questionably mediocre films,
which
a bit harsh.
But films which have it's not a franchise as such. But it's a film that's been done in many different ways before, in many different styles.
Yes.
Some better than others. It's Robin Hood.
It's Robin Hood. Indeed. Yes, and all. In fact, this was also original idea. It was going to be quite big and epic and a bit of a weird take on it, and it's ended up being boiled down to something slightly more conventional.
Well, it was going to be called Nottingham.
Yes.
And as we exclusively revealed here about a month ago on the podcast, when I thought it was called Nottingham still and you all corrected me, but it was it's meant to be more about the Sheriff of Nottingham was the idea. And then Russell Crowe got on board and said, I'd like to play Robin Hood, but I'd like it to be all about Robin Hood. And then, okay, let's make that film instead.
But apparently, because Nottingham was going to be Sheriff Nottingham kind of investigating Robin Hood as being this mythical, distant figure. And then Russell Crowe came on, and it was going to be him playing Sheriff Nottingham and Robin Hood as sort of a semi-fight club. But
really?
Not necessarily being the same character, but that weird take on it. And then now it's just Robin Hood.
Okay.
Except it's not, and I think that's why a lot of reviews have been quite lukewarm about it.
Mm.
And I think it's mainly because it's not really a Robin Hood film.
Right.
If you're going along expecting, hey, tights and merry men and hiding in the forest and archery, then you're going to be disappointed. But that doesn't make it a bad film, but it just means that you'll be disappointed.
Russell Crowe said in interviews, he used that same quote saying, this isn't the Robin Hood of your parents. You know, which is quite nicking the Star Trek thing, because the Star Trek thing used to say, this is not the Star Trek of your parents. It means that any new film they try and reinvent, the new Police Academy film, this is not the Police Academy of your parents. No, we've completely revitalised the formula. You haven't, you just made a big film.
Well, yes. It's if you come at it more as a generic historical epic of sorts, then it works quite well. I still enjoyed it, and it's about if you take the idea that Robin Hood was a real person, which possibly he might have been, he's not as clearly mythological as some people are, then it's his history, where he came from, how he grew up to not grew up, how he became Robin Hood. So it's an interesting story to see, but it's not really the Robin Hood story.
Yeah.
And it's just It is good, but it's quite long. It's not as action-y as you might hope. But it doesn't really slow down either. It's just there's quite a lot of dialogue involved, which is again why people might feel they've been misled slightly, because the trailer, swords and fighting, and there's not huge amounts of that, and it basically ends up being a film about war with the French.
Right, it's no bad thing either, really.
Well, no, exactly.
So someone's pointed out that this was the film that opened the Cannes Film Festival, and they didn't know if the French were aware that they were being painted as bad guys.
Well, yes, because
so
it is pretty much, look at the French, they're all treacherous, murderous people exactly. Sneaking over here to kill us in our beds. Yes. And then, oh, let's fight off the evil Frenchmen. Mm. Yeah, so they might not have entirely liked that either.
Oh, dear.
But Russell Crowe is fairly solid, as he normally is, and on several levels. It's just not... It is a good film.
You're not really selling it to me.
No, that's it. I just feel I need to qualify.
I was going to see it yesterday, but you sort of put me off with the.
No,
I'll see it at some point.
It's worth watching. Just probably know where you get it. But it's not. It takes itself slightly too seriously at times. There's not a huge amount of levity in it. But also, it's not as vicious and bloodthirsty as Gladiator. But nor is it sort of light as family friendly as Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I love Robin Hood, Prince of
Thieves. Well, yes.
It makes me want to see that again, to be honest.
Yeah, no.
Bring on the mullet.
I can see that bit.
Mullet and Brian Adams.
There are a few moments of gags in it. But it's just. That's the thing. I think it's just quite a hard sell to really define exactly how it is, because it's not sort of a true historical epic, but nor is it an obvious. It's the Robin Hood story. So it's just a little bit a movable target.
The other ideas that you were saying that they were bouncing around, you know, about who was Robin Hood, is he mythical? That sounds like a much more interesting film.
Yeah, except that's hard to work out. It's hard to tell that story at the time, because looking back at it now, we can sort of look at the history and go, oh, was he real, was he not?
Yes, but at the time...
If you're telling it at the time, then the sheriff would be like, well, someone's shooting all our people. It's got to be someone. And it's not as...
Well, I think that's part of the intrigue. Sounds a lot more interesting. Is he a real person? Is he one person? Who is he if he's doing... Because someone's doing these things. Yeah. I think that sounds...
Well...
Oh, dear, basically. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. It ended up being boiled down into something that was an easier sell to people rather than... And I think this is an easier sell. I mean, it's still not the typical Robin Hood story, but it's still...
Is that what we want?
I think it's
what the mass market will take more easily.
It's what we're going to get. And also, I don't think... I wasn't in a rush... for a new Robin Hood yet. I think there's not been enough time since either even the Kevin Costner one, or even on BBC TV we've had on Saturday nights the Robin Hood TV series.
Well, yes. But see, weirdly, that's why I feel the marketing's a bit weird, because if they were selling this more as a prequel, and saying, see where the man came from, here is his story, fighting the French and doing the Crusades, then you might get more people think, oh, I haven't seen this story, I'd like to see it. And it is a good story to see. But if you use pictures, it's the Robin Hood story again, which is what they kind of were, then a lot of people just think, oh, I've seen Robin Hood, I don't really need to see it again, so they won't go and see it.
No.
But it's a solid effort that is, I think, worth watching, but it can wait rather than rushing out to the cinema.
It seems to have a very good cast.
Yes, because you've got Cate Blanchett as Maid Marian, and the King John, I can't remember who plays him.
Max von Sydow, he's one of them.
No, Prince John is quite young. Max von Sydow is... Robin of Loxley's father.
Oh, okay.
Who isn't Robin Hood.
Right.
But again, you see, that's another historical thing where people thought he was Robin of Loxley, but he's not, and that gets explained as well.
But again, I'm thinking, Robin of Prince of Thieves, Brian Blessed was the father. That's who can top Brian Blessed? Fantastic.
Well, Max von Sydow is pretty good.
And then you've got in this one, is it Mark Addy plays Fry Tuck?
Oh, yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, and he's no Mike McShane.
And again, Mike McShane, you know, from Whose Lines Anyway? Come on!
Well, yes. But I think,
everyone seems to be a little bit older in this film. Am I right in thinking
Yeah,
that?
I think I was reading somewhere that Russell Crowe is one of the oldest people to have played Robin Hood. I think he's about the same age, or maybe the only person who was older was Sean Connery. Robin
and Marion.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is meant to be the older years anyway.
Yes, but even then, I think he wasn't, because Russell Crowe's about 45 now. And that's about the age that Sean Connery was when he's meant to be playing an old Robin Hood.
Of course.
But I think he pulls it off. He doesn't seem, I mean, 45 nowadays isn't really that old.
Yeah. And Kate Blanchett, obviously, she's not a 17-year-old slip, which is in the past, Maid Marian's meant to be really quite young. It's quite interesting to see
the
idea of her being a bit older, a bit more mature.
Yeah, and again, I won't sort of give away stuff, but how her backstory and what her involvement in this ties in quite nicely. Mm. And again, just in a way that I can't think, because in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Maid Marian, I mean, what's her genealogy? Who is she the daughter of?
I can't actually remember, but it's someone royal, isn't it?
Yes, well...
Wasn't she... King Richard's the good guy, isn't he? He's the one who in the Crusades. Wasn't Mayberry his daughter or niece or ward or something like that?
Something like that.
Because that's not the case in this. But again, but it all fits together better, I think. It's a more believable story how this pans out. And again, I mean, it's apparently based on research that this is how it could all have panned out. But, yeah, I mean, I realise I'm not doing a brilliant job of selling it.
Well, it's not your job to sell it. It's your job to review it.
No, I know. But I did it ultimately. I did enjoy it. I saw it with three of us went to see it, all relatively cynical, judgmental people, and we all quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I think you just the main thing is to know that it's not a typical Robin Hood story.
Does he fire an arrow with flames on it and it goes towards
hits the tree?
No, someone does fire a flaming arrow at one point. There's not that thing. There's not an enormous amount of bow fire. There is one very good shot and one quite good shot.
Yeah.
And because there's a battle at the beginning when they're fighting their way back from the Crusades, which is in France, just before they try and come home, and that's sort of almost medieval. Castle siege thing going on with lots of archery there.
Is it Russell Crowe leaving the Cannes Film Festival just slashing his way through the critics?
And also he has a proper northern accent.
Well, now this is interesting. I was going to get onto the accent.
Well, some people have just said, but I didn't because I've read mixed reviews about this. But generally speaking, I thought it was consistent enough for me.
Right.
He didn't sound Australian or American. He sounded broadly speaking, northern. I mean, arguably Yorkshirean, which is where Robin Hood is meant to have come from anyway.
We had one tweet from Review to a Kill who said, why does Russell Crowe sound great at times and yet others like a whiny, depressed Ringo Starr?
that's still northern.
Well,
it's still
Liverpool. Well, not Yorkshire, though.
Well, yes.
He did say it's meant to be from Yorkshire in his version.
Well, yeah. He moved around a lot.
But now, the thing is, I've heard of two interviews with Russell Crowe in the last
I read about
two
one
weeks.
Of them.
Was it the Mark Lawson one?
Possibly.
Probably.
Where someone said he sounded Italian.
Irish.
Oh, an Irish.
Yeah.
And he said he was going for Italian as a joke and then got quite annoyed.
Yeah, it was quite funny. It's on the, what do they call it? Front Row, the Radio 4 film review programme. And it's Mark Lawson, who's quite sort of intellectual, you know, film reviewer and does sort of the Newsnight review, that sort of thing. And he's interviewing Russell Crowe and it's this lovely moment where he just does, you know, says, you know, I take this idea that your new Russell Crowe, your new Robin Hood is set. You're saying he's not from Nottingham. This one, he's from Yorkshire. You said that in your you know your press notes. But I also detected that you were kind of saying he's travelled around a little bit and he spent a little bit of time in
Ireland and Jamaica
places.
And a bit of Australia,
exactly, a bit of like, in India and Australia and Cornwall and no, you know, he said it Irish and there's this wonderful pause. When you could just say, oh, no. And then he just swears profusely at this guy and, you know, and Russell Crowe starts going, what the hell are you thinking? No! I don't know, you got deaf ears, mate, deaf ears.
Well, yeah, I can see his point on that because he doesn't sound Irish at any point. Well, it might go down to slightly more sort of generic
why
neutral.
Why would you be that person?
Well, yes, well, you don't prod Russell Crowe.
I know.
You just don't do it.
And the great thing is, he continues the interview but gives really short one-word answers. You know, well, tell us, what did you, you know, what were you trying to achieve by, you know, portraying him in this particular light? He goes, well, you know, it'll all be good. Okay. And then you just hear Russell Crowe muttering, going, Irish. Irish. He's really affected by it. It's hilarious. The other interview was with Mark Kermode on the Radio 5 Live show. So Radio 4 and 5, not going to be great with the Russell Crowe relations here. And Russell Crowe was being interviewed from a distance, so it was over a phone line. And he says, and he found out that Mark Kermode had interviewed him before for Romper Stomper.
Oh, yes.
And he said, so what publication were you from, Romper Stomper? And he said, oh, well, I was working at the NME at the time. And he just started that again. It's like beep, 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 you beep, 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 because he said that was just one of the worst bits of journalism. You know, you slagged me off completely. And then Mark came out only after realizes, oh no, that was someone else. I was writing for NME, but my interview with you was for Five Live. But he stupidly said NME, and it's someone else entirely who really did slag him off. But yeah, I think Russell, if you're listening, we love you. We love you here on Movie Banter.
Well, yes, don't kill us. But he does have a temper. But also he is quite good. I mean, I think I do like him in things, and he does this believably. But yeah, just don't prod Russell Crowe.
No,
exactly.
Leave him alone.
Well, yes. Yeah. Also, another tweet from Paleo Girl saying the Mystery Alaska reunion. Sorry, I meant the new Robin Hood was good. Plus, I had no idea Max von Sydow was still around. Yes, yeah. So that prompted me to look up Mystery Alaska, or I've got the film, but look up who was in it. And yeah, it turns out him. Russell Crowe and I can't remember the other two guys' names, but Little John and Will Scarlett, I think it was.
Okay.
All three of them are all in Mystery Alaska playing ice hockey teammates.
Oh.
So yeah, so that's sort of a nice
good
banding together of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. And also, Mystery Alaska, if you've not seen it, give it its worth a watch. Mm. It's about an ice hockey team in Alaska who play a champion or sort of exhibition match against the New York Rangers.
Oh, okay.
And I've it's just quite it. A funny film. Yeah, I'll lend it to you. It's quite good. Anyway, so that's Robin Hood.
Good,
I think you've covered that.
I think we have. And if you've got any thoughts, do tweet them or or email them to podcastmovieband.co.uk.
Yes. Yeah.
So we've got still to come Four Lions, Hot Tub Time Machine, Desert Island Flicks, all to come. And one thing we were going to mention quickly was we're just chatting before we started recording about sentimental adverts.
Mm.
And I just thought it's worth mentioning here because a lot of them are, you know, either UK based or you wouldn't know about them if you're not from this country. So if you haven't seen them, we just want to say, if you're a fan of a sentimental advert,
yes,
get on YouTube, have a little look. John Lewis advert, just have a little, you know. Aww.
Yeah, it'll be the most, yeah, the John Lewis advert, it'll be the top result, I would have thought.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
yes. And because I haven't seen this, but had heard you, I think, on Facebook talking about it, and just thought, and now you're just showing it to me, I thought, yeah, it is quite moving.
Yeah.
Although at the same, the cynic in me, when you watch it, just find yourself thinking as it gets towards the end, think, are they, is it going to go on about 10 seconds longer? Or would that be inappropriate? Or not?
Yes, it would be inappropriate, so they don't.
Well, it would be quite funny.
No, you've ruined it now. No. Because they're going to be watching that thinking, oh.
Mm.
And
that's true.
All the way through, it's going to be like, ooh. Oh.
I haven't ruined it. Because it's more, it's the journey, it's
you
not how it ends.
Cynical ways.
Usual suspects.
Anyway, people who haven't seen it will have no idea what we're talking about.
14 years ago.
You can watch and enjoy.
Well, yes.
And then Jen showed us there's the Cowangate advert as well.
I think it's the Cowangate
ago.
One.
And the Tim Hortons one as well.
Yes,
wasn't it?
Which was from Canada.
From Canada.
All that coffee.
Yeah.
Which I just came across several months ago now. I think it showed during the Winter Olympics.
Mm.
That was just surprising. I felt myself welling up just watching it now. And it's a gift that certain filmmakers have. Because the story that they tell is quite straightforward.
Mm.
I think that's why it works.
But I think its music is a large part of it.
Well, yes. A good commercial can, you know, it is kind of movie banter in a way, really. Because, I mean,
mini films.
Yeah, well, Ridley Scott, who did of Robin Hood, he started out, he did the Hovis advert in the UK. He's done loads of adverts. So he's, you know, he's a good filmmaker. Gets a good start.
Michael Bay,
adverts.
Of course, was advertian.
Oh, that's right, rather extreme versions of them. Worth a look. If you've got any favourite adverts, why not let us know?
Well,
an email or whatever, you know.
Right, yeah. You can see adverts before films.
Exactly.
It ties in perfectly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good.
Should we move on to Four Lions?
Should we do Four Lions? Yeah,
let's do Four
Lions.
Because we've all seen this one.
We have. We've all seen
this one.
Yes, yeah. It's an interesting little film, isn't it? It's by Chris Morris,
yes,
who many may know or may not know from Brass Eye and The Day to Day on TV.
And if you're not, then again, YouTube, there'll be clips of it. He's sort of quite, he's sort of satirical comedy. Alan Partridge, actually, which people may know more of.
True.
Originated on The Day to Day.
Steve Coogan,
As just a sports reporter.
Mm.
But he's in that sort of poking fun at reality through a weird lens.
Yeah, he's been quite controversial in a lot of the sort of right-wing press in this country. He did a comedy about paedophilia, and therefore he should be banned from TVs. Actually, no, he did it in a quite an intelligent way,
yes,
I think. So
it was a show all about the media's response to paedophilia, which, of course, a joke that the media didn't get.
Yeah.
Yes.
Having a massive sense of humour failure about it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
So there are, he's got a bit of history, a bit of in this country. And so it's not, I think if you go into this film thinking, oh, it's a British comedy and it's sort of topical and it's going to be a bit like Borat or Bruno, it's not.
Ooh,
I mean, that's
no.
The more outrageous kind of cheap laugh version, dare I say it. Of the genre, really. But I think, you know, Chris Morris, you think you go in thinking it's intelligent comedy.
He will have thought this through very,
exactly.
Finely honed.
And he's done a lot of work. From what I gather, he spent a lot of time with sort of street-level Muslims in this country.
Yeah, because I've been wondering what he's been doing for the past several years, and turns out this.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is, yeah.
So the plot of it really is these four or five guys who are suicide bombers, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's what
radical Muslims.
It's their path to, destruction, of course, obviously, but it is their, you know, what they're doing. But it's kind of very interesting, I found, because it's putting us in their lives, really, isn't it? And and
which
we're
is
almost not quite siding with them, but we are sympathising with certain parts of the characteristics, even if not their cause,
and seeing the conflict as well between the seemingly very Western, quite radical guy who just normal wife and family, looking, you know, lives in a regular home.
Mm-hmm.
No Islamic attire or anything else. And then his brother, who, you know, a superficial way, people would look and think, oh, he's definitely Islamic, with a beard and right clothes and hanging out in the park with other similarly attired Muslim people.
Mm.
And yet his brother's there.
Not sharing a room with women and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very strictly adhering to all the Islamic law, and yet is has an inkling of what his brother's trying to do, and is saying, you shouldn't do this. There's no justification for this. Mm. Why are you planning this? And yeah, just addressing that conflict.
Yeah. Which is why it makes a good point that I think it's... I don't know actually how it this film's gone down with the Muslim community, although I did see, when I saw it, as I came out, there was about 10 or 15 Muslims coming in to watch it. So I didn't know what they thought of it.
Yeah.
But I imagine...
Given the research he's done, I think he said he took a lot of advice to make sure, basically, there should be nothing offensive in it to any... For say, want of a better phrase, sort of reasonable Muslim people. Well, it's poking fun at the extremism, not the,
The thing in the press that actually has been it's been families of 7/7 victims, and that's the problem. But again, it's people who haven't seen the film.
Yeah.
It's saying, well, because we suffered in this, therefore there should be no film about this at all.
That's ridiculous.
That's a comedy.
But I
do think that if they saw it, they'd see it's not an outrageous.
Was it? It's not like Carry On Suicide Bomber.
No, it's not. It's making some very, very good points, and I think it. Yeah, I'd recommend it.
I mean, it's finding, and it's not even a sort of constant laugh-a-minute comedy. I mean, it's finding humour in a lot of situations, but it also has a lot of serious points as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't even know if comedy is the right word for this film. There's some amusing points. There's some things that you have to laugh at just out of the sheer dark observation of it. But I came out of this film feeling really melancholy because these guys... You know, you are with them all the way, and you see what they're passionate about and how they feel and the kind of pride and loyalty that they have, and yet how they're so weak in the fact that that their actions are so futile. Everything seems so completely futile, and it's really poignant and sad in a way.
Well, it's the frustrations of how they feel about a lot of things, I think, or especially Omar, the main guy behind everything. Who is clearly very driven and feels he's doing the right thing, but then also you see the other people who a lot of them are one especially is quite simple and is clearly basically is doing what he's told to, and if someone says to him no this is right, he goes okay, it's right, brilliant, I'll do it, and you realise that's probably true of quite a few of the suicide bombers who are just led along and told, no, I know better than you, and this is right.
It's almost quite childlike, the fact that he's got this sort of eager innocence of wanting to do the right thing.
And it's one of the saddest bits, I think, of the film, while at the same time still being quite amusing in a weird way, is that whole part of when they're about to do something, and then the guy's going, but I don't know what does... You know, he says, do what your heart tells you. He goes, well, my heart's telling me not to. He goes, well, okay, well, don't listen to your heart then, listen to your head. But my head says... I don't know, and they sort of your head and your heart. They're confused.
Well, yes, and Omar's trying to sort of say no, because he makes it a point a couple of times saying, "Oh no, because the devil's got into your head and he's telling you the wrong thing." So listen to your heart. And then when he starts, changing his mind. Oh no, well, so your head's where your heart is, and your heart's where, and just trying to, by his own tortuous logic, trying to talk this bloke around and persuade him that he still knows best. Including also. Yeah, no. Well, one funny line, which I won't actually say, but relating to this guy's confusion, which is quite funny.
And there's a real great character as well, though. Say it because he's an utter git, and that's Barry.
Which is odd. Yeah. It's odd having the baddie of the suicide bombers, isn't it? Really, but there is definitely one. There is one who is the
yes, he's the only dangerous lunatic suicide bomber in a weird
he's
way.
He's the Begbie of the suicide
bombers.
Yeah,
he is. Yes. He is. Yeah, because you've definitely got there's like a Baldrick of the suicide bombers, isn't there? Yes. Really, and there's there are different levels of. Sort of bad or
because it would be very easy to paint
sinister.
Them all as look, they're all a bit stupid, and yet they're really not. They're clearly they've all got their own motivations behind things, but Barry is just he is actually a dangerous lunatic because at least
and interestingly he's the Western guy, he's the guy who's the white convert to Islam in this as well, so that's an interesting point they've made,
which is the weird, I mean it's the skill of the film in making you relate to suicide bomber, and not that you're thinking yes you should do this. But at least with Omar, where you think, no, we need to attack a high-profile target and make a point, because that's if we're not just doing something for the sake of it. We actually want to make a point in our actions. And then Barry is sort of picking weird places to go for and wants to blow up a mosque. And he has logic for doing it, but you're just thinking, well, no, because Omar at least knows what he's doing and he has a clear plan. Barry, you're just a nutcase.
You know who Barry reminds me of? The John Cleese character in The Life of Brian, who's the head of the Judean people's front, is sort of saying, come on, brother, you're with us, you're with us. And he's so driven, he's so much for the cause, but he therefore doesn't see any of the logic. And,
yeah. And as soon as he thinks something is for the cause, then it's for the cause, and it's self-evidently.
Exactly. So, and you know, you're either with us or against us, and if you're not, then you're one of them, aren't you? You're one of them. And so then you've got to prove yourself to this guy who's sort of self-proclaimed leader suddenly. But I think the reason you partly relate to it all watching it is that actually they've shown these guys as very westernised Muslims, and they are very much, yes, they are rebelling against the West, and they're saying death to the West, death to the West. But at the same time, they're playing PlayStation and they're watching Sky Sports and they're doing
and dancing around to Top Loader.
Exactly. You know, they're singing on the drive down to their big you know mission. They're dancing around to Dancing in the Moonlight. You know, it's they go, oh, it's quite a fun sing along song, isn't it? Well, yeah, you know, you're sort of partly embracing Western culture at the same time going, you know, pushing it away with the other hand. It's very interestingly done, I think.
The fact that the young guy makes his point at the beginning with a rap, you're there going, right, okay.
Yeah. And again, in conflict to the stricter brother, who is very strict Muslim, who is obviously uncomfortable with certain Western convention, like being in the same room as a woman and other things, and yet sort of still playing football in the park and, you know, living a normal life, but in adherence to his religion.
Yeah.
And seemingly having no problem with that, and you know, keeping the two separate.
Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, it's a very good film at pointing out, making you realise the conflicts.
Mm. And not only that, they've also, I've thought quite cleverly, particularly in the last sort of third of the film, not only sort of having a bit of a poke of fun at, you know, Muslim suicide bombers, but also at the British police, for example, as well. And you know, there's no good guys in this film, really, because even the police, who you think, oh, they're going to protect us from these lunatics, but actually, no, the police are also a bit lunatic-y themselves.
Well, yes, and they're jumping to the wrong conclusions and seeing, yeah, and the reference you made before I saw it, which is the conversation between two snipers, is very, and it's not even idiocy as such, because one of them I could really relate to, but when they're trying to identify targets, and the terminology they're using, which will make more sense when you see it, and yes,
but this idea that I think we've given enough way to just give this quote to say, well, I've shot him, I've shot the target, and go, well, that wasn't the target, it must be the target, I've shot him. And it's that sort of backwards logic,
yes,
which I think, you know, and it's, you know, the real life examples of this are very sad, and you know, the Stockwell tube gunning down, really, the police did, very very sad. And Jean-Charles de Menez was this guy who, you know, I don't know if people overseas know about this, but you know, he was just running from the police because they startled him.
Yeah, they started chasing after him with guns.
Shot him, and he was the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, very, very sad, and there's still a lot of people there still wanting justice, and there's a whole thing, not only sad that he died, but the fact that then the police, some people thought the police got away with it a bit.
Mm.
And I think this film addresses all that, but in a very, very careful way, but at the same time, I think a very good way. I think they've done very well. And it's, I think it's telling that those who still aren't, you know, familiar with Chris Morris's work, if you've seen In the Loop or The Thick of It, those sort of, I think it's slightly like an extension of that. Partly it's got the same co-writers, and also Chris Morris worked with Armando Iannucci, of course, on things like The Day to Day. So got a shared history there. But I thought it was excellent, and definitely seek it out, I would say.
Yeah, very much so. But and also just don't be put off by what a lot of media will, film reviews will probably be more accurate, but general reports will probably be, you know, comedy about suicide bombers, isn't it terrible? And it's like, no, it's massively oversimplifying things. It's really not. It's not what you will imagine. If you try and think of a comedy about suicide bombers, it's not really going to be like that.
It's not, whoops, where's the bomb?
No, yeah, it's going to be far deeper.
Yeah.
That said, well, actually, I think there is a, someone did make the tweet. It's Paraphernalia. Saying four lines, very good, not brass eye good, which is probably a fair point, but it's still very good, and seem to figuratively point and laugh at dumb people too much. I can see that point a little bit, not so too much, but there are certain, because two or three of the main people involved are clearly quite simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's not too much humour at their expense. There's a little bit.
Well, they also, aren't they silly? A couple of them are quite similarly stupid as well. Mm. And so, you kind of, are they both not doing the same job in a way? But yes, there's a bit of that, little bit.
But it's not overdone, I think. But
and
it's
it has
just,
to for the subject matter. I think it has to point out these people are ridiculous.
But because also you've got the counterpoint of people who aren't stupid but are misguided and are very focused. It helps to balance it out a bit.
It seems that to me that there isn't actually any one intelligent person there at all.
I think that Omar is. Omar seems,
but he's still got its huge flaws and problems. So there's no one who's excelling. This is the point. No, even the guy that he works with, who's got nothing to do with plots at all, he's also rather stupid.
That is true.
Yeah, it's just an interesting study of possibilities. Yeah. It's a good film. It's a good film.
The other tweet we've had is from A.M. Sutcliffe or Am Sutcliffe.
Is that Ali Sutcliffe who's emailed us before?
Could be. If it is, then hello.
And if not, hello anyway.
Hello.
And if not, no.
Whoever this person is, they say four lines. That sort of that good sort of funny when you laugh and then wonder if you should be doing so.
Yes.
Also features the corner shop on my road.
There
you go. Probably where they got all the bleach. Which is that in the film where he uses different voices, which are all his own voice.
Yes.
By lots of bleach.
And pretends to be a woman by holding his hand over his beard.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
With his voice.
And then if people ask him why he's holding his hand over his beard, it's because he's got a beard. I walked away for about a day saying rubber dinghy rapids as well.
Yes.
rubber dinghy rapids. Anyway, so good, a very affecting and well recommended film.
Yes, it really, really is.
Yeah,
Further down the scale,
in terms of comedy,
is Hot Tub Time Machine.
Again, is it a comedy? No, that's a bit.
It
harsh.
Is. See, I.
It's harsh.
I'm finding this a bit weird.
Because
you are. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a phenomenally funny film, but you two are both sounding quite dismissive of it.
We don't know what I'm going to might say. Yeah.
From things that have come up. Yeah. Well, anyway, this is a time travel comedy film with three adult friends, who's not quite middle age, but rapidly approaching it, and one younger nephew, who all go to visit the site of their rebellious youth, and get into a hot tub, and then get transported back to 1986, and hilarity ensues. Is the basic plot. You see,
there is some hilarity ensuing. I will grant that. I did laugh. There was laughs. Laughs enough to be have the comedy stamp on it.
Yes, fair enough.
But I felt it just owed far too much to Back to the Future and other time travel films.
Shares a cast member.
If it doesn't even share a cast member, exactly. Crispin Glover's in it.
Well,
it's clearly a knowing reference.
Yes.
Clearly they know what they're doing.
I don't feel there was anything direct. I mean, Back to the Future because it was sort of someone's flickering out of existence and to a degree, but that's kind of half forgotten about. But there's nothing massively ripped off from Back to the Future.
There's so much massively ripped off.
What specifically? Because none of it, nothing grabbed me as thinking, oh dear, that's a terrible...
For a start, there's the idea of just going back, from present day, back 20, 30 years. There's a whole 80s references
parents
to it as well.
To seeing your...
There's the parents.
The parent
there's
reference.
There's getting the parents together. Otherwise, you blink out of existence.
No, except that's more an accident.
There's the an accident. They wrote it in the script we've copied Back to the Future by accident.
The difference is, Back to the Future, he goes back. No, I've got to, and the main focus is getting his parents.
But that's
here.
The thing.
In this,
exactly,
it's more just. It's not the main focus of the plot.
It's not a direct copy. That's the thing. It's not a direct copy. But which is almost more annoying. It's not a direct remake. It's like clearly just going, well, we won't pay them anything for their script because we are going to change it. There's even like the fact that one of the guys in it then takes a chance to go back up on stage and then starts doing a modern song out of time of 20 years before it would actually be a hit song, just like Johnny B. Goode, except all the little bits. I was watching it and I did laugh. That's the thing. I did enjoy it and I thought it was funny, and I did enjoy it, but all throughout there are all these little bits like that,
like
where
bets
I sort of
on
go
games.
Yeah, bets on games,
looking for the missing ingredients,
the almanac type thing, all those things, and you go, oh, it's like Back to the Future, only they did it better. That's right. Every single bit, the Johnny B. Goode thing, you think at the end, or you might do one of those things like, your kids are going to love it type things, or some big top to it, but there was no big top.
See,
top
weirdly,
to it.
I just did
the song.
Thing is,
and then came off stage.
I can see that point now in the correlation. But when watching it at the time, Back to the Future didn't occur to me in terms of that Johnny B. Goode.
I'm amazed, to be honest, because I felt watching it. Not only was it that, but what it seemed to be is that in the original, Michael J. Fox's Marty McFly sort of did all of the things. When this one, they seemed to go, right, what are all the different characteristics of Marty McFly and all the different storylines he did in that one film? Let's split them into three or four and give them all one each. And I'd make it ruder as well. But so one guy just does the music part of Marty McFly. One guy does the getting the parents together thing of Marty McFly. Mm. It's all in there and just split up. And so you kind of get these more sort of one-dimensional versions of what was actually fully rounded character in the original.
See, I think the thing that I was focusing on more plot-wise is that whereas Marty goes back in somewhere he doesn't belong at all and is trying to sort of make things happen from his parents' past rather than his past. Whereas these guys jump back into their own past, playing themselves again. Rather than going back as, you know, third parties and seeing themselves, they become themselves in their younger selves. And then you have to... They set out thinking, no, we must do everything as we did before because we've got a warning, otherwise the world will end. But then end up thinking, well, no, it was all a bit rubbish. We want to improve our lives by tweaking things. Is it dangerous to do it? Is it not? And so that, to me, is quite a different angle from what Back to the Future did.
Well, they did the same thing. Marty came, you know, changed it so that his mum wasn't alcoholic and...
No, but that wasn't deliberate. That was a side effect of how things panned out. Rather than him thinking, my life's rubbish, how can I improve it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a major difference, but that's just where I was thinking more.
To be fair, when I was watching it, I didn't have Back to the Future screaming at me, but now that you highlight it more, I completely agree that it's just... It's a bit too familiar in that respect. But my problem with the film is that you'd be going along one path, and then you change into this ridiculous kind of... Oh, I got a teen movie. Considering that these are adult guys going back, this is a film, I think, that should be based at sort of that kind of audience, but it's not. It suddenly turns really puerile. But
yeah.
It is.
Not consistently, but they throw... I mean, there's one vomiting moment, which isn't needed, and I thought, if it was a gross-out comedy, then that would fit.
Yeah.
But it's kind of pretty much the one gag like that in the film, and you're thinking, okay, right.
It suddenly goes a bit scary movie or teen movie, or it just... it jars, and the fact is, it knows that it's doing it, and it's there looking at you directly at one point, asking for this word I need to use, forgiveness, and I'm sorry, but I haven't got all the forgiveness you require for this film.
Yeah, it's a very... I mean, I did enjoy it, but it's very flawed, I felt, and all the way through you're going, I like it despite all of these things, not because of all of these things.
But it is a likable... It's a likable cast, which I think helps.
Mm. Yes.
And so it does carry you along, but it is... I can see the criticisms to be levelled against it, but not that many of them occurred to me while I was watching it. I was more aware of the fact that it didn't... As a whole, it didn't entirely hang together. Mm. It's sort of... You've got the basics of a time travel plot with jokes stuck into it, and it's all a bit scattered and spread out.
Even the... Because obviously, with the film, as you'd guess, they go back to the present day, and there are some changes, and it just seems to have shifted in a complete circus world. It's just like, it's a bit of a strange thing to suddenly take in all at once, and everyone seems to be completely okay with it. Like, no one's at all like, hey, I don't even know you. You know, it's all accepted.
Well, because
they all
see people they already knew, but it's a radical change.
Yes.
Which, again, is thrown in because, hey, here's the gag that things have changed. But I couldn't help but think of the ramifications of it all. And because at least with Back to the Future, they go back to the future and his life is improved. They're still in the same house, same parents, just everything's a little bit better. Mm. And in this, it's all quite different. And I'm just thinking, well, so that would be quite confusing. Mm. It's like, do you know the same people? What do you have? How do you work out what your life now is?
Yeah.
What I also thought was quite amusing is there is a bit of a cameo with the assistant, the engineer, who comes and tries to help.
Oh, Chevy Chase
who comes to try and help the hot tub, and you're there going, look, it's him! Oh. Yeah, and then that's it.
He's underused, I think.
Completely.
Very much so. I mean, he's almost sort of the Doc Brown character on a much smaller scale. He's not a main part of the film, but he's the guy who can explain any of these things and can help get you
back.
He's the Rufus.
He is the Rufus.
Yes.
He just sort of walks in and does a few lines and a bit confusing and walks out
again. I mean, the main gag, I think, is just that he's very confusing and they genuinely don't know. And even I do. I mean, he obviously is kind of well-informed, but... For the first couple of appearances, you're genuinely not sure, as they aren't, is he actually just fixing the hot tub?
Yeah.
Because what he said could just relate to fixing a hot tub, or does he actually know more? And they get a degree of mileage.
It's just like, that's the one.
The gag could have been... I mean, to be honest, I thought it would have been better if he had all these appearances. What?
I think a lot of things would have been better.
No, I was going to say, a better gag might have been if he had all these appearances and then he turned out just to be fixing the hot tub and he was just speaking weirdly and he had no idea what all this...
Well, that's the trouble. I think the film lacked any sense of subtlety. I mean, if you compare this with Four Lines, I think it's quite appropriate that we introduce this by saying, well, different sort of comedy, very different, in that you know, I think again, watching it, I'm going, oh, Back to the Future just was so much. They did subtle things. It was so well planned. It was such a tight film, and it is. I mean, when you compare anything to that, that's the problem. I'm well aware.
Yes.
If Back to the Future didn't exist, I'd enjoy this a lot more.
This is far more of a comedy than Back to the Future is. Back to the Future is very good and very light and has moments of levity, but it's not really gag heavy.
You can
such.
Tell though with Back to the Future, they spent a lot longer on it.
Oh yes.
It's much more fun. It's not as much, funny.
It's a far more complete film,
but it's got much more in that sense. And the trouble is, if you take on any film like that. If you're going, we're going to make a film that's a bit like this absolute classic, the trouble is you're always going to come out going, you know, it's kind of not quite the same.
But yeah. I think the difference is that Back to the Future was sort of aimed at, you know, it was aimed at kids. It was a kid film that happened to work really well, whereas this seems, it's like, who is it based at? Is it based at the bored and frustrated late 30s, early 40s who just haven't done anything and want to relive a really sick part of their youth? I mean,
well, no, if it was a slightly better honed thing, they could have trimmed out. I mean, there was not that much gross out stuff, but one or two.
There's
elements
a few
of that.
Enough, yeah. Yeah, it is quite pure, and if not gross out, it's pure.
It's just well, yes, but then sometimes that's funny, but. But they could have targeted it more at the, you know, 30s to 40s crowd.
Yeah, and done...
Of, you know, really making a point of these people whose lives haven't worked out as they wanted, what they can do. But instead, it doesn't quite fully touch any specific base. Yeah. But I still came out of it thinking, I quite enjoyed it.
My two favourite bits were, as I said before, actually, were by the same person. And it turns out both made up on the spot by the actor in question,
yes.
Who is called...
Craig Robinson, I think.
That's the fella. And one of them is the guy, when he just deadpans the camera and just says... Must be some kind of hot tub time machine.
And then just stares
at the camera for about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And that was made up by him on the spot, and I thought that was a very good bit. And also there's the moment you know is going to happen, which is going to be when they sort of walk around going, this is all familiar, except everyone's in 80s clothing, and then someone's going to go, just grab someone and say, what year is this?
Yes. You know?
But their way of doing it, I thought, was much cleverer, which was, excuse me, Michael Jackson, what colour is he? And they go, black. And so that's the thing. And I thought that was very good, and that was apparently those two are both made up by Craig Robinson, and which I think is telling that my two favourite bits were not written by the writers.
Well, yes,
but
that's it. I mean, cast-wise, it's worth a mention because Craig Robinson is very. I think he's in The American Office.
Okay,
I think, and I've seen him in something else. John Cusack, I always like John Cusack. He's
good. He's very watchable.
Yeah, he's understated and should do more comedy.
That's why I thought he was a bit. He wasn't disappointing. It was just disappointing that he was in this film.
Yeah, he could have, because Gross Point Blank, I think, used him to very good effect.
Yeah.
That sort of, he needed a bit more, slightly more dialogue. But also the nephew, whose name I can't remember, but is in Kick-Ass, and he was in Sex Drive as well. And he's very good, and I want to see more from him.
Okay.
Because, yeah, he's got good comic timing. He's very good at playing because he looks kind of like a geek, but he's good at playing a not actually quite as geeky as you think he is character. And also Rob Corddry from Daily Show, as once he was. See... I really
I couldn't stand him in it.
Well, the character is an appalling human being. But
right. Yeah. No, it was a good character. He's a utter.
Well, he is an utter. horrible. But as a result, whenever he's on screen, I just thought, oh, okay, you're going to say something inappropriate, puerile, misogynist, and then we'll go back to John Cusack, who we all want to see. So okay, no, get through it. Okay, now let's go back.
No, see, I really quite like Rob.
Yeah, because you're puerile and misogynist.
I really am. Just like someone as ugly and as woman-like as you would say that. It doesn't work. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of puerile misogyny. It doesn't work.
Oh, bless you.
Shut it, woman. Anyway. No, I really did quite like Rob Corddry. It won't be to all tastes.
No, definitely not.
But, yeah, and again, he's no... Again, actually, the Hangover was what I was more comparing this
to. Well, that's true. They did one, and again, I don't think it was quite as good as the Hangover.
No. It's not as funny as the Hangover.
Trying to be
and nor is it as tightly plotted as the Hangover.
No.
But it's not... It doesn't fall way short. I mean, it's not an appalling mess of a film, but it is ultimately funny. But just... I don't expect anything as well-crafted.
I think that's a good summary, but I would say it's quite good fun, but not as well-plotted and tightly plotted as... any other film.
If you like Scary Movie or things like that, you'll like this. I think,
it's better than Scary Movie. Scary Movie wasn't bad. The sequels are all awful. The first one wasn't
movie
too
films,
bad.
I mean.
It could almost be called...
Oh, no.
It could be called time travel movie, in a way.
No, but I think in a way you could,
because it takes all the references. It does a little Back to the Future thing, it does...
No, the epic date movie, all the other movies...
Well, they are awful.
They all just turn up and say, hello, I look like Johnny Depp.
But
there's the gag.
Say it's
and
true.
And they
it's
have
better,
no
it's
moments
better
like
than
that.
Those, but it's nearer that, I would say, than a Four Lions or an intelligent comedy.
Oh, no, it's not an intelligent comedy, but I'd say it's nearer...
Basically, it's very, very silly.
Yeah. It's nearer.
So
it's around your
you
American Pie ish.
Yeah.
It is
level.
It is.
Rather than any of your epic movie things.
Anyway.
Actually, we also had a message on Facebook from Laurie Harless. Am I reading that right?
Yeah,
Laurie Harless, yes. Saying Hot Topic is funny and stupid mixed together, but I'm a sucker for 80s movies. I don't think that's probably the fairest summing up we can get. Because it is funny, but it is also stupid.
And it's clearly. It's the only 80s movie you're going to see which is not made in the 80s in a way.
It's sort of a relatively believable 80s film. Actually, one thing that is slightly odd, because they jump back into their old selves, but we see a reflection of them, and so they look like their old selves, and with a reasonable casting job. I think Craig Robinson now has a kid and play or kid or play style haircut. And John Cusack, the young John Cusack, looks quite like young John Cusack, although it's slightly weird given that we've seen young John Cusack 20, 30 years ago in films.
Of course.
And so we know what he should look like, and he doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Although he does seem to be wearing a coat in the sort of the Say Anything era.
That's true, yeah.
He does look a bit
like
that at one point.
I think he's sort of based on that bit, yeah.
But as a result, then we always see them looking like them in day-to-day life. But it means that when there's sort of one or two romantic involvements... I say romantic, over glamorous.
Yeah,
and so the ages are
it's
slightly
a bit uncomfortable. Off.
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
God, yeah, that's
like Jim
but
Carrey.
It's not done too much.
It's a bit Jim Carrey, Zooey Deschanel in Yes Man.
Yeah,
it's
never too weird, but equally, mainly John Cusack and his then girlfriend. But there's nothing too weird happens that makes it odd. But the one age-related thing that is very strange is Lizzie Kaplan is in it.
Yes,
so I have a lot of time for Lizzie Kaplan. Yeah. And she's in it in the 80s, and then we see her back in the present day, in what context, I won't say. But she's the same person, and looks exactly the same
pretty
in both time periods.
Just shorter
slightly
hair.
Slightly different hair.
She's had a haircut.
Well, yeah, and so that's just slightly odd.
Yeah.
Because you thought, well, they've obviously changed a lot in that time period. Lizzie Kaplan is... she's too old.
And she's
it's 25
be...
years difference, is that right?
Yeah,
and also she's meant to be older than them anyway at that
time. Because John Cusack is then meant to be probably 80. It must be 18.
Yeah,
18,
I guess,
like that.
Yeah.
And
she's
so,
a journalist, professional. So
yeah. So well, she might be a young journalist, but also, I mean, she's probably 30-ish, give or take. So and she doesn't look.
She's
going to
be 45 in the future, hasn't she? Really?
No, more than that.
At
it's
least.
20. Yeah, so but ultimately the ages don't work on that level. It's just slightly.
But then
odd.
Because it's a silly nonsense film, you're not going to read too much.
Yeah,
it really.
No, I know. But I think that's indicative of the kind of
exactly
the
again,
relative lack
yeah.
of thinking through of some point.
More tightly plotted film would have planned it a little bit better.
But well, if you're in the mood for a silly laugh, then by all means go and see it.
Go and see Four
but
Lions.
Maybe wait. No, because if you're in the mood for a thoughtful laugh, then go see Four Lions. But maybe just wait for a rental for Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah.
Some tweets. Should we do some tweets? Any
tweets?
Right.
Fair enough.
Yes.
We have some more.
Yes, we have had some tweets based on last week's and the week before, indeed, our film reviews from thence. This is a tweet from Desideratist. 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 I've no idea. Who says, I found Iron Man 2 amusingly silly. DIY particle accelerator.
This, because Jen made that point in Iron Man 2, and I'll minimise my ranting now. But there was an article on online, essentially saying that, pointing out that you can make your own. People do. The first ever one was about 5 inches in diameter. Thing is, Jen right now is giving Paul a look at an old John.
Jen's biting her lip.
No, yeah. I'm there going, okay, but yeah, but not an afternoon in your lounge.
We don't know it's an afternoon.
It is though. We do.
But it might have been a week.
It wasn't.
how do we know?
In the because it said that he's on day watch and it's made reference to.
They don't say you've been in here an afternoon. Have you finished?
I think it is. In
the time he does that, Whiplash churns out thousands of drones. Can't be an afternoon.
Let's move on because
anyway,
I need to finish this and go and build my particle accelerator this afternoon.
But my point was, it was interesting enough saying it is actually possible to knock something like that. You need to know what you're doing,
don't
but
think
it can be done
really.
Adrian D. Hart says, I watched The Ghost last week. A little slow in places, very enjoyable nonetheless. The Polanski cinematography was awesome.
Very true.
And that's quite correct.
Yeah.
So I think we did, was it last week we did best Roman Polanski film? Was that our?
Yeah.
Yeah. Critiques, I think it was, wasn't it? Yes. Mm. So yeah, all good. All good. If, look, Roman, if you're listening, I know you've got a lot of time for listening to podcasts at the minute, so drop us a line. An email from Dan Hughes. Now, I don't think we read this out last week, did we? We don't think we did.
Don't think so.
If we're repeating ourselves, then apologies.
Then fast forward.
Yeah. But Dan Hughes says, hi guys, long time listener, first time commenter. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Just finished watching Defendor, a movie that takes the Inglourious Basterds approach to weeding out spelling Nazis. Spelling Nazis from potential audiences, is that right?
Yes.
Weeding out spelling Nazis.
Yes.
What does that mean?
As in people, as in, because the Defendor is spelt incorrectly, as was Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, I see.
Right.
We don't. Oh, I see. We don't spelling Nazis.
Yes,
I see.
Because
I was
thinking
Nazis
in the film.
Oh, I see.
Because it's about Nazis. So I presume it was a Nazi-based film, but about Nazis who spell.
No,
so yeah. like
those spelling bees, you know,
right.
but Nazis.
No, it's purely the spelling of the title.
H-I-T-L-E, oh no. I've no idea.
Can you use Hitler in a context? What would you do with Goebbels?
Anyway. Oh dear.
Anyway.
Yes, if you took Kick-Ass, Boondog Saints, Forrest Gump, Gran Torino and Sin City.
Wow.
You would end up with a movie not far from this. How? That's quite extreme. That's quite bizarre.
Take Sex and the City and Reservoir Dogs. Exactly. You pretty much got. Yeah.
Wow. Defendor is the tale of a man, Woody Harrelson, who decides to try and clean up his town, protect the innocent, and smash punks with his trench club. Sounds brilliant. He has the mental age of a child, but seems to be somewhat blessed in not getting a complete ass-whipping immediately. Joined by on the way by a hooker named Angel, Kat Dennings, Nora from the Playlist movie.
Oh, okay.
We like her, very good. It's a rather interesting idea about how she differs. Harrelson's acting is wonderful, really drives the movie the whole time, while the rest of the cast perform well also. The script was balanced, which is no mean feat, when the main character could make Homer Simpson seem like an intellectual juggernaut. It's funny and sad, tense and charming. Where most scripts in this area take a nosedive and go horribly bad, this one treads the fine line of being good and staying on it. Sadly, due to distribution deals, it's a bit of a bastard to get legally at the moment, but definitely worth tracking down.
Oh, yeah, because I've seen the trailer, and yeah, it just seemed to vanish from the face of the earth. But it's clearly around out there.
It looks quite good.
Turn up on DVD.
Yeah, I think it sounds brilliant. I think anything that mixes those films together.
Because as a concept, it sounded a bit too much like Kick-Ass, but there's clearly more to it than that. It's taking its own route. So sounds like well worth a look.
Mm. Very good. Well, that's all the emails we've got, actually. So if you want to drop us an email, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, and I should say, if you can make them sort of shortish and pithy.
Well, that's true. Nice. Readable out.
We've had, because sometimes we get essays, and then we've got to sort of, you know, go through them and try and pick things out, and sometimes it's too much time.
Well, yes. We read everything, but we can't necessarily read out everything.
Exactly. No. So, which is why Twitter's quite good, 140 characters or
that's
less.
That's very true.
And I think it was Milton Jones, comedian, said that Twitter is people trying to get across a point in 140 characters or less, like EastEnders. So,
it's so popular.
Doesn't matter. But we're on there as Movie Banter.
I think we have had other email about relating to Desert Island Flicks, which we weren't going to read out because
we'll do that next week. We're going to do best car.
So if you're sitting there thinking, "Hang on, I'll email you," then we'll get you.
Yes, indeed. So for now, it's best time travel film.
Yes, which was a suggestion from Callum.
Callum, indeed.
Who also suggested best car chase, which we're coming to next time.
So we'll do it exactly. Or you can travel into the future and then listen to it then. So many to choose from. So many.
Well,
where does one begin?
There was one on the Big Bang Theory. Two people had to move in together, and they say, right, we need to make an agreement that if either of us invents time travel, then we come back to this point first to let us know. Nothing happened. Okay, we never do it.
I was thinking the other day that I was just thinking about, you know, my progeny. I'd love my grandchild to one day be an inventor, just not of time travel, because he might come back and try and kill me to see what happens. So we don't want that.
Would he risk it?
I don't know. Maybe not.
I say women could invent time travel.
No, I doubt it.
Well,
only because I doubt that anyone would invent time travel. That's all I meant.
Hang on, you're not doubting your grandson's going to invent time travel.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I haven't thought it through.
No.
Time travel.
Can we just say at this point the film that we have to choose cannot be Back to the Future?
Yes.
Oh yeah, a non Back to the Future time travel. Yeah. So it's got to be Hot Tub Time Machine, which is definitely the next one. And that was Jen being mugged by her future self, who's come in and no, she hasn't.
Jen, I think Jen's doing that a disservice, but anyway.
We've done that. So I'm going to say Primer, because it's...
You like cheap shirts?
Primark.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Primer is a very... It's, again, intelligent. Like, I'm clearly going for the, you know, Four Lions and intelligent comedy stuff. Primer, not comedy, but it's a very... Probably the most intelligent film I think I've ever seen.
It's near impenetrable.
It's a real thinker.
Yeah.
Got to watch it a couple of times to fully get it. But I think it's really rewarding if you can, you know, get that far. So,
yes. Well, I think I did, because it's relatively short. And when I watched it, I did watch it and then immediately watched it again.
Very, very low budget.
Yeah.
And I think the guys making it, they've only made that, and that was about... six, 7 years ago, but they are making a new film to be out, I think, next year.
Ooh.
But they've made it. It's a guy just made it in spare time with a camera and a couple of friends.
Because it does just pretty much look like, you know, three friends in a shed for a lot of it.
Exactly. But I think it's excellent. In terms of its tightly plottedness thing,
yes.
I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, they've clearly worked out every aspect of it.
Yeah, well done them. So I'm going to say Primer.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Hmm.
Jennifer?
Well, to be honest, I'm sure if I really go back and think very, very, very hard, I can come up with something really worthy and, you know, scientific. But I'm actually just going to go for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I think it's just a really good, fun film. Yeah. And having seen Hot Tub Time Machine, it just made me think, you know what, I really want to watch that. So,
yeah, it does seem to have been slightly forgotten about.
Yeah.
Well,
I feel.
Yeah.
So this week on my island... I think I'm going to watch that.
This
one.
Island's getting pretty full of DVDs now.
It is true. Yeah. You really should put a DVD player on
at some point.
The box isn't doing it.
Building shelter out of DVD cases. See, I am going to go. It was a weird one to boil it down. Tempted by Army of Darkness.
Right.
Because I'm a sucker for Evil Dead. But I'm actually going to go with 12 Monkeys.
Ah, fine.
Very nice.
Which is. It's not as obviously time travel based, because you're not jumping around as much, but it's still a very important part of how it all ends up panning out.
Mm.
Time travel being quite important.
Well, one that I was also sort of thinking of, I don't know if this counts, was Memento, because you're sort of in his short term memory, you're jumping around
time
in time. Yeah,
yes.
But that's why I thought that's not actually.
But you could
time
say
travel, is
any film with a flashback, we are time travelling watching it.
Yeah.
Godfather 2.
Best time travel film of all time.
Definitely, yeah.
Maybe that should be another one in the future, best flashback.
True.
Yeah. Although, that's a pretty,
quite
a pretty broad scope. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you go.
But, well, anyway, well,
you sort of need something that we can search quickly for on Wikipedia. That's okay. Generally the way.
Well, that's true.
I don't think they've got best flashbacks.
When we decide on these 5 minutes before we start.
Exactly. <that. laughs> Yes.
No, but let us know your favourite time travel films and also your favourite car chase, which
we will probably do next week. Yes.
Well, in 2 weeks, time.
Let's think something about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Indeed. Yes.
But I think.
Good, that'll do. Awesome. Yeah, we said we wouldn't touch the hour. We clearly have. So, hey, happy hour!
Have we?
Yeah, we have.
Let's check. Ooh, yeah. It's dull.
Hour
just
and
over.
7 at the minute, unless dull. We edit. If it's less than hour and 7, then we swore too much. that had to go.
But, yes. Hang on, but then if it is an hour and 7, then that means we didn't swear at all.
Yes.
Does that mean we need to swear now just to really get it out of the way?
Oh.
You mother.
Anyway. Again, you mother.
Anyway, so it probably won't be going two parts. Just one.
I think
one
it's
long...
probably one big fat film, but big fat podcast, this one is, I guess.
Oh, fair enough. Well, Jenny's here.
We started with an insult, we'll end with an insult. So there you go.
But yes. So yes, thank you for your time.
Cheers.
And enjoy. And yes, we're going to put out a short one next week.
Oh yes.
Yes, a little sort of preview for
little,
things next week
or something. Yeah. I don't know what. Yeah. But we'll see.
So enjoy.
Till then.
See you next time. Bye.